and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm excited about my guest today. She is an author, a coach, and an expert on a topic that I love. Please help me welcome my guest today, Kate Swoboda. Hey, Kate, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, we're so excited to have you. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started doing the work you're doing today?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a life coach and author. My book is The Courage Habit. I also train and certify people to become life coaches through the Courageous Living Coach certification. And I talk about the courage habit formation juggle over at Your Courageous Life. And how I got here, you know, I always love the people who tell it like it is and tell you about how it like wasn't all perfectly easy and all that good stuff. And so I like to just totally own the fact that I'm not into the guru model. I got here looking at courage because I was incredibly afraid. And all my strategies for logically working with fear, particularly with going into perfectionism and like overachievement as a way to try to outrun fear or placate my fear so that it wouldn't come up, that kind of all came to a head the day that I was sitting in a meeting after having climbed some ladders for a job that I had actively trained for, gotten an education for, student loans to prove it. Mm-hmm. You know, like every choice I had made was designed to land me right there. And then I was in this meeting and suddenly I was going, I don't want to do this anymore. And it's like, if you've ever been in like the wrong relationship and like a little voice creeps up inside that's like, you need to get out of this. And it's like, at first you don't want to lose a relationship. So you're like, no, it's fine. We'll work on it. Da, 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 you know, like all that stuff. But you know, that's what was coming up for me. And I felt this supreme lack of ability to trust myself, because if you make every choice that gets you right here, how do you then turn around and trust yourself? Because I thought I was being intentional when I got there. So now I don't want to be there. Where do I want to be? And it became this kind of unraveling process of going, I can't out-logic this. I can't out-think this. I can't outrun this. I can't work hard enough or perfect enough to figure it all out. Like, this is just, you got to feel all the feelings of fear and not knowing. And it was really terrifying and really wonderful in its own way. The wonderful part came later, but that is what put me on the new trajectory of getting into being a life coach, building my business, and really, more importantly, I think, using all the tools to really go, who is it I want to be? Because this kind of like dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, it looks good on paper, but it isn't who I want to be. And I talk with a lot of people who really find themselves in that place of going, I have a house or a marriage or kids or a job, or I have these things or these circumstances that work for me, and yet I'm still not fulfilled. And I think that's where we practice some of our best courage.
So you talk a lot about courage. Tell us what your definition of courage is.
I define courage as feeling afraid, because nobody gets out of that part. There is no fearless. And if anybody's trying to sell fearless, I'm like, you need to run in the other direction. Nobody is fearless. Mm-hmm. So feeling afraid, diving in anyway, because otherwise your options are to stay stuck and that isn't the best for you in the long term, and transforming. And even if you transform just an inch, that is worth it. And really, you know, courage is often put into memes or Pinterest images as like this glittery, beautiful adventure. And it is in its own way, but it's also a rumble, as Brené Brown might say. It's also your face is in the dirt, you're falling down, you're making mistakes, you're grappling with not knowing, you're doing your best, and it still isn't enough to save the relationship or make your rent or. And that's the part of courage that I really find most admirable, because when people are feeling their fear and diving in anyway, that face in the dirt moment is its own transformation, even if you haven't hit your outcome yet, your desired goal. I think we need to unhook from goal setting. They're helpful as a metric, but there's a lot of courage that we can acknowledge ourselves for when we're really struggling and really in it.
Mm-hmm. I love that definition. So you talk about courage being a habit. How can we see courage as a habit, or how can it become a habit for us?
Well, that starts with recognizing that fear is a habit. And we don't often think about it that way, because we think of habits as being like remembering to brush your teeth, right? Going to the gym daily, or, you know, using I statements the next time you talk to someone and there's a conflict. But actually, there are these fear-based habits that people get stuck in that become whole identities. And so when we look at how to turn courage into a habit, it's about how do we look at the places where a fear pattern or a fear-based habit system is at work? Because if you aren't looking at that, you'll just trip all over yourself trying to, you know, do courageous stuff. Mm-hmm. So we got to look at where the fear is at work, what those fear patterns are, and then go, okay, how do habits work? Habits run on a cue, routine, reward loop. Mm-hmm. There's a cue, which is like fear, feeling fear. Mm-hmm. There's a routine that people go into. And when there's a fear-based routine at work, that gets them to a reward that is only a temporary reward. When somebody is starting to practice courage as a habit, they feel fear. And instead of going into that fear routine or fear pattern, they go, I want to choose something different. It's hard. I might not do it very well, but I'm going to choose some kind of behavior that builds my emotional resistance to get to the greater reward of long-term change. And what I call the courage habit consists of four specific things that I found in the research into behavior change and emotional resilience and psychological courage that add up to people looking at their lives and going, instead of getting stuck in the fear loop, I can consciously practice courage. And anything you consciously practice long enough can become a habit, which is really cool to me. And I totally geek out on it if you really want to know the truth.
Totally. Well, I'm very interested in your four-part courage habit process. So as a lot of my listeners, what we talk about a lot is getting out of your comfort zone and trying something new. That's what I really encourage my listeners to do, whether it's losing weight, whether it's starting a business, whether it's cleaning out your closet, whatever it is that stretches you and gets you out of your comfort zone. How might someone apply the four-part courage habit process to getting out of their comfort zone?
Okay. Well, first, let's look at the ways in which they currently avoid their comfort zone. Okay. So usually three ways we commonly try to deal with fear is we try to avoid it or ignore it, or we try to placate it. That's kind of what I was talking about, like the perfectionism. If I just do life right, I won't be afraid. Or we attack it. And that's where you get the memes about, I'm going to kick fear's ass. I'm going to tell your fears to just shut up and take a hike and stuff like that.
Yes.
And the problem is that the research indicates that doesn't work. So the four parts of the courage habit, and I can break them down in more detail, are accessing the body, listening without attachment, reframing limiting stories, reaching out and creating community. And this is a process. So you could do one, you could do all, you could start with creating community, you can move all around. It's not like linear steps and you have to do it in order. It's like when I feel afraid, instead of trying to outrun fear, please fear, attack fear, how do I recognize my habitual fear patterns and then instead go, you know what, here I got this fear pattern of perfectionism. Pause. I am trying to overwork or work my way out of a problem instead of choosing courage, which is access the body, or instead of I need to call a friend to create community, or instead of I need to listen to what my fear is saying and reframe it. It's when we choose those courageous behaviors instead of the patterns of perfectionism, people-pleasing, pessimism, or self-sabotage that we are going to see the moving forward. And that's that stretching outside the comfort zone. And I love the steps of, or the process of the courage habit in part because I bet some of your listeners, when they think of moving outside their comfort zone, like if they want to start CrossFit and they're totally intimidated about starting CrossFit, that feels huge. But if you want to start CrossFit and you're intimidated about it, it's outside your comfort zone, you could take the step of just accessing the body first. Like, okay, what's my body telling me about why this is so intimidating to me to commit to this? Or why don't I talk to a friend who I know used to be totally, I don't like to exercise, and now she does it every day and she's always talking about how she loves it. Let me reach out and create community rather than thinking it's all or nothing. I either show up and sign up for the CrossFit membership and go 7 days a week, or I'm a loser. And that's the dichotomy we want to get people out of.
Mm-hmm. So what are some ways to work through fear and self-doubt to create a happier, more meaningful ways of living?
Well, it depends on what someone's aim is. You know, I mean, if we're really looking at just simply getting outside of your comfort zone, that I think is a really incredible, you know, it's a form of ordinary courage. So you want to live a meaningful life. It's not, I lost the weight, actually. It's that I had a desire to have a change in my life that was outside my comfort zone. And I decided to look at my values. I decided to go, why do I want to lose the weight? I even was willing willing to ask the question, am I sure I even want to lose the weight? Maybe I'm just caught in like a body paradigm that's been put on women about what their bodies are supposed to look like. So you're really asking the hard questions so that you can get to the truth of who you are. Because living a meaningful life is really about what I think is the most courageous thing anyone can do. And that's letting who you actually are on the inside be how you live on the outside. Mm-hmm. So weight loss for weight loss's sake, or because you think your body has to look a certain way, will never get you the results that you want. It will never actually get you a meaningful life. Deciding that you want to start a business or travel the world because it's this like big lofty dream and you see other people doing it and look, it looks glitzy. If that's not the truth of who you are, and if you aren't willing to ask the tough questions about who you really are and what your most courageous self truly desires, it's really hard to feel fulfilled, even if you hit all the notches, right? Like all the markers, which is really what I found sitting that day in that meeting going, I don't want to do this anymore. And kind of going, could have shocked me. I felt like I was the last person to realize, like, I didn't want to do this anymore.
So how do you teach people to clarify what truly matters to them? And then how do they prioritize it and stay focused on it?
Well, in the Courage Habit, I walk people through a process of defining what their most courageous self wants. And, you know, I modeled the book, The Courage Habit, after a coach-client relationship. So when you first work with a client, you often set a vision, a primary focus, some kind of goals for the trajectory of the coaching relationship. So I did the same thing in The Courage Habit, where it's like, who is this most courageous self? And what do they want to do? And there were some things that I was finding were really common when I would ask people what they wanted. And those findings were in alignment with courage psychology. So what people want is actually not to finish the marathon or become a famous artist or, you know, have the biggest house on the block. What people actually want at the heart of it all, and this shows up in their most courageous selves, is to be able to clarify how they want to feel and then make decisions that cultivate those feelings. Like, they don't want to finish the marathon. They want to feel how they feel when they are proud of having finished the marathon. That's the real big deal. They want to feel their pride and their commitment to that as an accomplishment. They want to do things like develop more resilience, or before they make decisions, instead of reacting, go, what does my most courageous self want? Let me tune into the body and intuition, not just logic, not just people pleasing. So to help people with that, it's really, you know, I have a couple exercises. One of my favorite is what I call the liberated day. Like, if you could describe your ideal day from the moment you wake up to when you go to bed, what's that going to look like? Who do you live with? How do you express your creative longings? What are you doing for work? How does it give back? How do you feel? How do you want to wake up? Like, it's all the things. And then we start teasing out, you know, nobody in the world has like exactly their ideal day every single second of 24 hours in a day. So how do we start teasing out ways to pull elements of that into your life? In The Courage Habit, one of my favorite anecdotes to share was that a yoga teacher who, you know, she went into teaching yoga, was very drawn to teaching yoga, but she felt like, okay, you go to yoga, you're all like breathy namaste, you're all like respect your, you know, your body and how you want to do it. But actually what her most courageous self wanted was to show up with like a bunch of badassery and be like, you know what, everybody, don't sell yourself short. Try out that pose that intimidates you. See where it takes you. Don't hurt yourself, but see where it takes you instead of only doing the ones you're comfortable with. And that's like a version of stepping outside your comfort zone. And so she started integrating that into how she taught yoga. And she started doing little things like just wearing like this badass moto jacket all around the yoga studio. And she found that when she was doing those things, it was like she didn't need a whole life overhaul. She just needed more of who she really was on the inside to be how she lived on the outside.
Interesting. So then how would, once they figure out what truly matters to them, what they truly want, how do they prioritize it and stay focused?
Well, this is where the work really is, because the fear is the thing that's going to pull them off focus. So saying what it is I want kind of starts the journey. And then that's when you engage with the process. So you're going to say, I want to, I'll use the marathon again, you know, I want to do the marathon, or I want to take a trip around the world, or just, I want to have a better marriage with my partner. And there are going to be a million little things along the way that are going to pull you off focus. So another thing I help people to define is, to really get clear on what their fear pattern looks like so that when it's coming up, it can't run on autopilot anymore. And there are four predominant fear patterns that I really notice with people, and they are perfectionism, people-pleasing, pessimism, and self-sabotage. So in teaching people how to recognize what those look like when they come up, the work is, oh, I'm feeling intimidated about going after what I want, and I'm going into perfectionism mode again. I'm trying to outwork it. Or I'm going into pessimism and going, what's the point? I'm self-sabotaging by, you know, talking to like that wet blanket person who never supports anything. I'm people-pleasing. I'm putting everybody else's priorities in front of my own. Those are fear-based behaviors. So it's not really, now that you've recognized the fear-based behaviors, just don't do them anymore. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you're going to totally do them again, because you're not perfect and nobody is. But the second you recognize, oh, wait, hold on, I'm doing it again. I'm saying yes when I really want to say no. That's the moment when it's like, okay, pause. Let me access the body. Reach out and create community. Listen without attachment. Reframe limiting stories. One or all or some of those options. Because otherwise, the same fear-based habit just plays itself out over and over again.
So what are some of your personal daily habits that help you cultivate courage?
Well, meditation is a huge one. And I know that's like such a common response. So I just want to say how many years it took for me to get to a point where I was adamant about making space for meditation. And also, I like to tell people too that I used to think, typical perfectionist, that meditation had to be sitting in front of a blank wall, watching your breath. And then every single time you came off the breath, you were just supposed to go thinking and then come back to it. And anything less than that did not count. And I don't believe that anymore. Mm-hmm. I am an avid user of Insight Timer, which is available free and paid. I love listening to guided meditations. I still do just mindfulness, basic following your breath, but I think that that is a daily habit that's really important. And then I'd say exercise is a big one for me. I'm bringing up CrossFit for a reason, because I'm one of those crazy CrossFit people who like fell into it and now is addicted. And if I've gone more than a week without cleaning and jerking a barbell, I'm just like, something feels wrong. Something feels all wrong. So those are some of my daily habits. And then I'd say that it is a daily habit to really practice the courage habit. Like, it's a date, you know, I mean, anybody who's married, try practicing listening without attachment to your partner, listening without attaching to what they say as meaning something about you or being personal. Try reframing limiting stories when you're handling a toddler meltdown. Mm-hmm. You know, reach out and create community when you're going, I don't know how to handle this problem. I'm stuck as an entrepreneur. Access the body when you are like, okay, I'm sitting at my computer. I have a to-do list a million miles long. I got to prioritize, and I can either do this list overwhelmed, or I can do this list centered in my body. It's going to be the same either way, except for my attitude about it.
Yeah. So in your over 10 years of coaching, what do you think your clients struggle with the most? What do you coach your clients through the most?
There's a lot of, I think, well, coming back to who someone truly is and allowing that to be how they live, and feeling like a feeling under controlled by the story that if you can't quit your soul sucking job and go do the, you know, work you want to do, and if you don't have the body you want to have, and if you don't have the friends you want to have, and if you haven't fully healed your relationship with your in-laws or your parents from your past, that like somehow you're doing it wrong. And that kind of ties into a not enoughness. And I really love looking at the ways in which, you know, I borrow this image from Byron Katie. You know, I once heard her tell a story about how if you're walking down a trail and you see something coiled up ahead of you on the trail, and you're like, oh shit, that's a snake. You know, it's very good that you jump back and you're like, oh wait, that's a snake. I need to proceed with caution. But once you look closely enough and see that what's ahead on the trail is not a snake, it's a rope, you cannot go back to seeing the snake. And I've always felt that that is how stories work. Those stories we tell ourselves about not enough, not capable, etc. It's like once someone has that moment where they clearly see that that story of limitation, I can't do that. That's actually not true. What's ahead is a rope. It's just this thing sitting there on the trail. It can't bite me. Mm-hmm. You can't go back to seeing it as a snake anymore. So those sorts of like getting up from under a story about what you're capable of or what you're worth or a story of limitation around what's possible, those are always my favorite. And those are things that I think really provoke some profound breakthroughs for clients. Because once you see that you're making up stories in one area of your life, it starts to become, wait a second, I told myself I couldn't run a marathon, that only like those athletic people on TV can do that. But here I am, I just did it. Mm-hmm. What else do I tell myself in my life I can't do? What else am I capable of?
I love that. So if you had the audience of all the women in the entire world and you could tell them all one thing, what would that one thing be?
Ooh. That is such a good question. Can I have a couple things?
Sure.
Okay, because there's one that I do want to say. In part, one thing I really want to say is put down your phone. Because I just really believe that there's a way in which we're all losing hours of our lives every day.
Yes, amen.
To crap that's on the phone and we forget it's not real. It's just like pixels that are on a cloud, a server somewhere. It's not real life. It's like every time I see a mom who is like texting while, you know, at the park, that's not a great example because I want to walk that back a little bit. Texting while on at the park and their kid is like kind of going, mom, can I show you a stick or a grubby little thing? And the mom just really isn't seeing, you know, like the kid in front of you showing you the worm or the stick is so much better than anything that's on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I notice I'm feeling self-conscious about that example because I don't want to be misinterpreted. I don't mom shame. I've been at the park and I've had something come up for work and I'm doing double duty and I need to text and that's fine. I'm talking about checking out on the phone. Mm-hmm. I'm talking right. about ways in which we right. use our phones to check out, to not be here. It mm-hmm. kind of breaks my heart to see two women at dinner with one another across the table from each other, both of them on their phones. It's right. like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. But I think the other thing I would want to say is, you know, believe in the power of 5 minutes. Like there's this real all or nothing thing that happens when we get caught in not enough. And we think we have to be all of it or none of it. We have to have all the time or put all of our effort to a goal or else why bother? And, you know, if you meditate for 5 minutes, that's better than no minutes. If you choose foods that really make you feel revitalized for 5 minutes, that's better than not choosing them at all. Mm-hmm. It's 5 minutes. You know, life is lived a moment at a time. 5 minutes is actually pretty good for anything.
Yeah, I've noticed I started trying to figure out how I was trying to break down how I got so much accomplished in a day, because people often ask me like, you do so many things, like how do you do it all? And I started noticing that I time block, but I also, if I'm warming something up in the microwave for 2 minutes, I will go switch a load of laundry at the same time. Or if I'm waiting for the water to boil, I will, you know, chop some vegetables or something. I'm constantly taking those small increments of time to see how much I can accomplish in that amount of time. And I've noticed that helps me get a lot more done.
Yes. Yes. The multitasking. Yeah. Yes.
So 5 minutes, 2 minutes, those are valuable, precious chunks of time if you'll do something worthwhile in that amount of time. I don't love multitasking because I found that I can be more effective and get more done if I will dedicate all of my time and attention to one thing without getting distracted. But if I'm doing something that doesn't require anything of me, I can make those precious chunks of time more efficient by finding something else I can do while I'm waiting for the microwave to finish or the water to boil or the phone is ringing and I'm not talking yet. I can get something done. So anyways.
Well, I love that you brought that up because, you know, time is a crunch for everyone these days. And, you know, if you've got, you know, it's not always about doing the task. It's also too, like while the water's boiling or while you're da da da, like you can mindfully switch the laundry mm-hmm. and you can take the time while the water's boiling to just stop and pause and give yourself space to breathe.
Sure.
Or, you know, we can unhook from the culture of do altogether. And it's just like, I don't have to do anything right now. And
yes.
In this world that is so hyper-focused on hacking your way to maximum efficiency, that is an act of courage. Just, you know, what'd you do today? You know, I just didn't do anything. I just hung out.
Interesting.
Just took the day off. Like, yes. You know?
Yesterday, I totally took a sick day. My husband was out of town, my kids were all at school, and my stomach was hurting so bad. I just made the conscious decision to take a sick day, and I did really very little. I laid in bed and I read a book that I have been wanting to read. And I just said, you know what? I'm not going to count for this time. I'm not going to feel like I should be doing something else. I'm just going to do whatever makes me most comfortable today because I can.
Yeah, there you go. I love it. That's perfect. That's a perfect example of
courage, though. It took courage because I was like, I'm not going to look at my to-do list. You know, I'm going to be there for my kids when they get home from school. But while my kids are at school, I'm just going to do what makes me comfortable. I'm just going to take the day off and I'm not going to do all those things on my to-do list.
I love it. I love it. Amen. To everybody who's listening, take a page from Monica. She knows what she's talking about.
So important. Well, okay. So tell us what you're working on now and what you're most excited about in the future.
Well, you know, since The Courage Habit came out, you know, getting a book, birthing a book out into the world is like a big, big thing. And I've really been learning that it's got a lot of parallels to birthing an actual kid in the sense that, like, it's not like the book arrives and then it's like, oh, okay, you know, cool, we hit our due date.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, and then this whole other, you know, kind of cascade of work begins. But so I have actually been intentional about not going into perfectionism mode and like trying to create a new big thing. I've really been working more on the things that already are here and getting some space to delight in them. And being director of the Courageous Living Coach Certification, that is like a huge delight. That's, you know, I tell people it's the job I never knew existed until I had it, because I get to coach, because I coach the trainees. I get to be a curriculum design nerd, which is another of my nerdy passions. I get to facilitate, which I also love. Community, you know, really wide variety of different people who join our training, who are kind of all united by this real desire for community. And so I think that that's something that I've really been looking at. And then with the growth of the program, building a team that helps to ensure that we are able to support all of our students has meant that I have totally, as an entrepreneur, walked into a new space that I didn't have a skill set for when I started, which is, how do you manage a team? Yeah. Because everybody has different personalities or different expectations. And sometimes you piss people off. Sometimes you do things that aren't a vibing for people. And it's been a real learning curve to figure out what works and how to implement. I don't know. I just don't think of myself as an operations manual person, but it's necessary now. So that's new for me.
Interesting. Awesome. Well, I'll make sure to link to your book. And do you have a podcast? Did I see that?
I have two. Yeah, I have the Your Courageous Life podcast, which is my personal podcast. It's not interviews. It's like, you know, looking at different aspects of courage. And what do you do when you feel like quitting? How do you not quit? What is true courage? Things like that. And then I have the Craft of Coaching podcast, which is all about literally the craft of coaching. So I know there are a million podcasts out there that are all about marketing for coaches, but my podcast is about, like, yeah, when you're working with a client, how would you design client-centered exercises for them to use in between sessions? And so it's kind of a sneak peek in some ways into the curriculum for the Courageous Living Coach Certification, but I like to unpack it a little bit and kind of talk to people who are considering becoming coaches or people who are new and emerging coaches who want more skills.
Very good. Very good. Well, we'll try to link to all of that in the show notes. And where can my listeners find you if they want to get more of you, learn more about you, your book, your podcast, all of the amazing things that you're doing? Where can they find you?
Well, yourcourageouslife.com, teamclcc.com, and I'm Kate Courageous on every single social media outlet except for Facebook, where I am facebook.com/yourcourageouslife. And if people want to get a taste of what my book, The Courage Habit, is like, of course, it's at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all of that, but the Your Courageous Life website, people who become subscribers can get all the worksheets that go with the Courage Habit book. And of course, if you have the book as well, the worksheets make more sense, but you can definitely do them without the book. And those are totally free to anyone who joins my newsletter.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to dig deeper. And I encourage all of my listeners to check it out and to just get more of you, to find you at Kate Courageous. and My Courageous Life. Is that right?
Your Courageous Life.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kate. This has been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Wasn't that interview just so much fun? I feel like the caliber of the guests we have on this podcast just keep getting better and better, and Kate is no exception. I like to call her Kate Courageous because that's how I think about her. It's also her social media handle on almost every platform. But I love her definition of courage. And I love how she gave us four kind of enemies of courage, if you will, or excuses for not displaying courage. And I have to admit, I try to read books that my guests have written before I have them on the show. But she actually reached out to me and I didn't get a chance to read her book before we did the interview. But I am telling you, I cannot wait to read this book. I'm anxiously awaiting for Amazon to leave the gift on my doorstep, and I know I will read it so quickly. And I'm excited to do another episode about courage from The Courage Habit that Kate wrote, because courage is such an important part of this podcast. I feel like the first step towards finding and living your purpose is to have the courage to seek it out. First ask, what is my purpose? And once you figure it out, it always takes so much courage to live it out. It's a get out of your comfort zone and figure out things that you have never done before and do it for the greater good kind of thing. And so courage, I feel like, is such an important aspect of all of it. So I just want to thank Kate for coming on, for her study and knowledge on the subject of courage and all that she's doing. I am excited to dive into her podcasts and just learn all that she is putting out. And so I want to wish her the best, and make sure you check out The Courage Habit if that's something you feel like you're interested in learning more about. Next week on the podcast, we have two amazing women. They are twin sisters, Andrea and Brittany, and they have an Instagram account called The American Moms. And so since next week is we celebrate the 4th of July, I invited them on to do a special patriotic 4th of July episode. So make sure you tune in next week for that to get yourself all in the mood for the 4th of July. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.